brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. It's Matthew with you here. And for the main part of this episode, Robert's back on the show. We played a game recently. It's some rules that I've been tinkering with and kind of embellishing and trying to create. The purpose of which, I want to create some rules that I could play with sci-fi games for scenarios, basically. And the rules can kind of blend into the background. So rules that are light and intuitive and still really flexible and fun, but just don't get in the way of other things that we maybe want to do or achieve on the tabletop. So this has been a really cool and interesting experience from my perspective of, you know, not being a games designer and being, to be frank, quite a limited gamer as well. You know, I've not really played that many games in my life. So I have been consuming a lot of content on the subject for the last couple of years, but obviously there's a big difference between theory and actual practice as well. So yeah, I've been working on these rules for a wee while. They did start long ago as basically Song of Blades and Heroes. I took that as the skeleton, and I've as much as I love those rules, I've kind of tweaked and added and taken away and changed and all that. So had a few games on a solo basis, which straight away it's amazing how they throw up issues that, you know, on paper don't look like they'd even be a consideration or a thing, and that is taken to a whole new level when you bring in another human player as well and you're kind of trying to explain or justify certain things to them. So really fun experience, and already after doing that, you know, the rules are, they're still recognisable, but I've already cut so much and made so many different changes as well. So I just a enjoyable hobby style process for me, not got any intentions around them at all, other than hopefully getting them to a stage at one point where they will be my go-to rule set for any kind of sci-fi skirmish scenario. But before we get to that, just a wee update on the old painting table. On the last episode, as I mentioned, I had the fortune to go down to New York to bring out your lead, and picked up a few things from that brilliant shop at Foundry, and also got a great couple of freebies as well. So my naked picks, I picked out one of them, no pun intended, from the blister, and I was going to say kitted him out. I mean, he's completely naked. He didn't take a lot of painting at all, but he's going to be a companion, a sidekick for Jeff, the wizard. Jeff is a character that a lot of folks in the Discord community have on the basis that we're going to make this kind of solo collaborative campaign, and everyone's going to have the same miniature, but there's a sort of central narrative going on. To be honest, we need to all get together and figure that out at some point. But anyway, we've got Jeff and his sidekick, Hector the Naked Pict. I got that big, massive troll character who is an absolute joy to paint. I don't know if it's maybe a Kev Adams. The face would suggest it possibly is, but I know there's other brilliant sculptors out there as well. But this big guy, big, massive lump of metal, he took a bit of doing to get a prime on him, because I've got the double-sided tape and a stick to take it out and spray, and he was so heavy he fell off a couple of times. So big, massive lump. I got him primed, and it didn't take much painting at all, but just one of the miniatures that the paint almost seems to walk off the brush onto the miniature. And again, me being a very limited painter, I still think that it came up fantastic, just because it took the paint so well, and also it just didn't need that much done to it. So my big troll there, I've started putting varnish on these guys as well. I finally finished that big block of 25 goblin spearmen at 15mm. Had to chew through that a wee bit, got a wee bit that sort of bad combination of monotony, but like a lot of it was quite tricky as well. There was on the miniature, I mean, it doesn't look like a complex miniature, and it's not, but there's just a couple of wee hard to reach areas that when you're having to repeat that 25 times, it's not like your brain's going into autopilot. So you've got that worst of both worlds. Like, I'm still having to pay attention, but I'm just doing the same thing again and again. You know, there are obviously some instances of batch painting where your brain just kind of settles into the back seat and you've got a podcast on and you're able to just go into autopilot. But aye, for some of the painting of this unit, that wasn't the case. But I'm really happy now that they're done. Nice black loincloths combined with red spear shafts, so an aesthetic I'm very fond of. So they'll go into my growing Orc and Goblin army at 15 mil. And the big troll guy will work at that scale as well. He'll work at both 20 and 15, and to be honest, any other scale as well. So now they're at the varnishing stage, varnishing up some human crossbowmen at 15 mil as well, a wee 10 man regiment of those. And I've got in front of me here, I've started work on some sci-fi zombies from, I think I got them from North Star, so they're probably intended for Stargrave, but just a set of six of them that will come in handy for all sorts of different scenarios. And I'm not going to do too much to them at all. I think I've base coated them with, I think it was a Skeleton Horde over the Zenithal Prime, and I've just put some of the Plague Bearer flesh on their skin, so it's given them a bright green look, and I'm really enjoying the contrast between those two colours. So I really don't think they're going to get much more done to them, to be quite honest with you. I've got a unit of dwarf spearmen, that's 20 of them at 15 mil. They'll join the human empire force, and I think they're going to be pretty cool to paint. I think they're going to be quite enjoyable when I'm looking at them now. So they're all undercoated, ready to go. And then a couple of 20 millers just to keep a bit of variety as well. I've got my two freebies actually. So one of them is the official Bring Out Your Lead 2024 miniature. So it's Brian Ansell's face, and he's meant to be sort of a chaos wizard, and he's holding this big staff, and the top of the staff is like the old Citadel castle design. So just a really, really fantastic miniature to own. And you can't have enough sort of chaos sorcerers in your ranks, can you, for all sorts of different scenarios or warbands you want to create. So that's just a really cool miniature, you know, given the background and what it represents and how I got it as well. So another miniature that I got, I have to say thanks to Jeff at Oakbound Studios. He was walking around the place with this box of miniatures that he basically didn't need, and he was very kindly offering them to people. So I picked out this, it's a Ral Partha miniature going on its tag at the bottom, sort of Barry Gibb lookalike. He's got a crossbow and a bag, like a burlap bag. So just a sort of funny, characterful wee guy. Again, the sort of miniature that you always find a place for in a warband or a narrative scenario. So going to paint him up as well, and amongst those dwarves, and then I've got a second coat of varnish to get on all of these other guys. And next up, I'm going to take my pick from, it's either I've got three units of 10, so 30 in total, goblin archers who are pretty similar to the spearmen I've just painted. So I'm not necessarily looking forward to that, but I'll break them up into 10 this time and do them 10 at a time. And I've got two units of goblin wolf riders at 15 mil as well. Those are two units of 9. So I think I'll maybe do one unit of archers and then one unit of wolf riders, then go back to the archers, back to the wolf riders, and kind of work through them that way. And I'll always keep a couple of 28 mil miniatures on the bench as well. It's a toss-up between, I've got some Burrows and Badgers stuff. I've got rabbit warriors, hare warriors. I've been reading Martin the Warrior, the Redwall stuff, to my daughter recently, so I'm back in the mood for that. So I've got some of those wee guys I might get cracking on. And then I've got some Chaos Space Marines from Nightmare that I've been putting off painting for ages as well. So I'll flip a coin there and see what I decide to do alongside all of this 15 mil stuff. But I really am getting there with the 15 mil. There's not a huge amount to do now, and I've got two fully painted armies, which will coincide perfectly with the release of Hobgoblin, I reckon. Anyway, that's enough about painting for now. Let's get to this game. Like I say, this is Robert and I playtesting a set of rules that I've been tinkering with and tearing it apart and trying to fix it again. But hopefully you'll enjoy the listen, and if you've got any ideas or suggestions at all, feel free to get in touch and shoot them my way. Here we go. Robert, welcome back to the podcast. You've joined me this fine afternoon to playtest some rules that I've been tinkering with. So welcome back.
Thank you very much. Great to be here as usual.
Yeah, so a bit of background for the listener. I've been tinkering with these rules, which many years ago were Song of Blades and Heroes, and I've kept various things like the sticks, the three-stick system, the roll-off for combat, but I've been doing a lot to them, just trying to get like a sci-fi rule set that, well, serves two needs. Like, it's really simple to play scenarios with, it doesn't get in the way of the scenario, and the other thing is just this concept of something always happens. And something's always happening so far, isn't it? It's kind of half time in our game. We've had a couple of turns here. So before we get into it and ask you some cutting questions for brutal feedback, like what are your kind of early overall thoughts?
I would say there's always something happening. There's no easy victories to be had from any of the one-on-one skirmishes between the figures, and it makes for a very lively game.
Yeah, so on the one hand, so far, I am unhappy because you've rolled so badly, which has meant that it's really like created a lot of disadvantage for you. But on the other hand, you could argue that this is a good thing because it's showing up potential issues. Like, a game like this is always going to happen eventually. So if we just sat down and played this rule set, you know, 20 times, we'd probably find that you'd maybe beat me half the time, I'd beat you half the time, and it would all even out. But so far, because you've rolled so badly and I've rolled quite well, it's really showing up a lot of the, you know, they're not advantages for me, but I'm getting a lot of opportunities to kind of hit back at you. Was there anything you kind of wanted to start with? Because I know you've taken some notes. We've tried to avoid speaking about it whilst we're playing. So what's one of the first things that maybe jump out to you?
Well, the first thing I noticed was that me taking a shot and firing on one of your chaps can mean potentially two bad things can happen to me as a result, even if I feel like I've got a fairly good shot on. You know, like I could fired at you and my gun could misfire and it can explode and I that's my gun out of the game, or it jams and I've got to spend however many turns it is trying to unjam it. Or even if that doesn't happen, I could just simply miss and you then fire at me and wound me. So that's like, I could potentially do one wound on you, but adversely, my gun could explode and you could shoot me. So it's like, it puts me in mind of making sure that my strategy is right and not just firing whenever I feel like it. Like, there are other things, other modifiers you can bring into play, like supporting fire and stuff like that. And I'd be keen in future to really be sure that the odds are with me, because otherwise they're certainly going to be against me.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and it's something that's really been shown up so far. So again, my ethos, without being a games designer as well, and these things all look great when you're sitting with a pen and paper writing them, or, you know, sitting at the computer coming up with these ideas. But I mean, just to fill the listener in, so what could happen if you shoot at me? If you roll a one, a natural one, you're going to then have to roll on a weapon malfunction table. And if you roll a one again on that, your weapon's going to explode and potentially wound or kill you. If you roll a two on that, your gun's out of use for the rest of the game. So straight away, like, there's no insignificant risk of just having a shot there, which should be you on the front foot. Suddenly you're very much on the back foot. And then another rule that I've got at the moment is, you know, if you unsuccessfully shoot at me, I then get to immediately return fire.
Yeah.
So like you're saying, what should be an attack and move from you, you know, if you roll badly or I roll well, you're suddenly really under the cosh. And of course, the consequence of that is you could end up with somebody playing this game and they just don't want to take shots because they're too scared of what might happen. And then everything I've tried to bring in here to make it action, you know, it's action packed. It's not a competitive game per se. We're both trying to win it. It's never a tournament rule set, but this idea that something always happens and it's always, you know, cinematic, it's maybe gone a bit too far here, and some of that I think would have to probably be dialed back.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking as well is, like, you had one chap and he was out in the open, and I fired at him twice, and he fired back at me twice, and I presume he didn't have to reload his gun or anything. And I mean, that's a kind of a cinematic thing, but the idea that you can fire at someone and they can fire back at you as many times, and I wonder if like seven of my players all fired at the one player of yours, would he be able to fire back up to 14 times?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's almost a semantic thing or whatever, or pernicky if you like, but it's something that could be screwed down. It's always the problem as well, that you want to make something better, but the cost is that it's more complicated and more bookkeeping, as you put it, more admin and so on. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're a million miles away from tuning it to the satisfaction of the average player, but yeah, at the moment it's very much not like chess, where I move and I take your piece, the end. It's more like, okay, my king attempts to take your pawn, but your pawn might kick my king's arse, you know?
Yeah.
And I do agree. I think there should be a certain amount of jeopardy involved, and it shouldn't just be a simple, oh, I shot your guy between the eyes and that's it. But there's certainly a balance to be had somewhere in the details, whilst trying to keep it fairly simple as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some of the other rules that I'll just fill the listener in on. So, I mean, the stat line for this game so far, if we look at troop types, so I've got three different troop types on the table. We've got specialist troopers, core troopers, and grunts. So, you know, a strong, an average, and a weak, if you like. They have a marksmanship score. That's a modifier on a D6 roll. We're always rolling off against each other. So if you're shooting me, you're rolling with your marksmanship modifier in mind, and I'm rolling with my physique in mind. So that's my kind of defensive skill. So it's a roll-off similar to Song of Blades and Heroes, but instead of just a combat score, these have been split into two. And we've also got competence. Again, this is just a rip-off of the quality score in Song of Blades and Heroes. It's really the same thing. So a competence of three. If I need to make a competence roll, I'm going to need to roll three or more. So partial cover is one of the things. Again, I know all games, especially skirmish games, struggle with cover and partial cover. And I figured that, you know, I've got this short stick's length. So if the defending player is reasonably within short stick's length of some sort of cover that they could, again, realistically duck behind, then we could make a competence roll to find out if that happens. And that is that, instead of us rolling off against each other, or instead of me just rolling that dice, I'll match it up against the attacking player's competence score. So if they're equal, it's a four. You know, if I've won better, it's maybe a three. If they've won better, it's a five, and so on and so forth. So it's just that that's you trying to get the shot away. If you do get the shot away, you then get to make the shot. But then it brings in other complexities. Like if you've taken quite a hard shot, and you've had to pass a competency roll to make that shot, and then I get to return fire because that shot failed, do I then need to take the competency roll to return fire? Because then it ends up, you know, what should be one simple action has descended into us just rolling a lot of dice. And I don't know if that gets a bit silly. So there's all sorts of wee things that I'm noticing that I do need to definitely nail down and streamline and maybe change a bit.
Yeah, I've noticed in previous games, I've often tried to be quite tactful and cautious, and you've been like, right, well, let's just see how this game actually plays, and you've gone for it, and you've suffered quite badly at times because you were cavalier about it for the theme of the thing, and I decided, well, I'll, you know, come on, it's only fair, I'll try and be a bit more adventurous this time, and got nailed for it with bad rolls and exposed, and the problem is when you're coming up with rules like this, you're always thinking, well, whatever the difficulties are, players will try to work against that. You know, like they'll go behind cover, which is an obvious one, or we'll go in pairs for the suppressing fire or supporting fire. So that's the kind of thing you've got to think about. Like, all right, well, I'll always make sure, well, maybe if you get into melee, then it's harder for them to fire back at you or something like that, you know, like a return fire or... You know, you've got to try and think of the way that the rules can be bent to encourage what you want to happen, Like, you want the players to be a bit more bold rather than us all going into Overwatch and camping and daring somebody to be the one that sticks their head above the parapet, as it were.
Again, I mean, we're playing this kind of vanilla as well because we don't have a scenario set out, because I just wanted to focus entirely on the rules and
yeah.
beat them into shape, hopefully.
Well, that's it. You know, when you were talking about it being a playtest, people that are hired to playtest video games, for instance, they're not told, take Mario to the castle and beat the game. Well, not just that. They're also told, try to fall through the floor.
Yeah.
Try to break the game. Try all sorts of things and try to exploit any weaknesses and make sure that the game's rigid enough to survive somebody doing something daft or whatever. And that's what we're doing. So if you can imagine my roles, if they'd been fairly good and yours had been fairly good, this would be a completely different conversation. We'd be like, yeah, it seems okay so far. So it's to our mutual benefit that the roles have been pretty wild, because that way we can see, you know, worst case, best case scenarios and so on.
Let me talk to you a bit about the ones and sixes thing. So I listened to a really good podcast called Rule of Carnage, and coincidentally, I listened to an episode on this very subject recently where the hosts, you know, had a lot of good, valid criticism on this concept of a one is always a failure, a six is always a success. But I've kept that in for now because, again, I just really like the fact that there's just always a chance of something funny or cool happening.
Yeah.
So again, you know, for the listener's benefit, if I shoot at you and you know, if you roll a one trying to defend that, or I roll a six trying to get the shot away, we're forgetting about modifiers, and I'm going to wound you. And to take that to an extreme, then, if you were to roll a one and I was to roll a six, you know, this is based on the wound's based on you rolling a one and me rolling something else. But if you roll a one and I roll a six, then that's immediately, you know, I've shot you between the eyes, basically. So there's, and I know that. Again, listening to that Rule of Carnage episode, they're talking about the fact that as well, a D6 is quite a small dice. So when you're rolling two of them, and, you know, two ones or two sixes could come up, like, or you know, a one and a six, it's not a small chance. So
yeah,
it's meant that, you know, a lot of ones and sixes, particularly ones from your end, have been rolled so far, to the point where, does it go beyond cinematic and action-packed and just get a bit silly and frustrating? So, I mean, what's your thoughts on that so far?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's probably why they invented the D20, so that there was less chance of an absolute disaster happening. Because you've got to imagine if we've got 18 different players, what would you call them? Models?
Yeah.
Figures? Then you've got, like, three of those people on average are going to fuck it up.
Mm-hmm.
Their guns are going to explode or whatever. And you imagine watching over the battlefield and you see the battle happening, and every now and again, every 30 seconds, somebody's gun explodes. It's like, we need to start buying our guns from a different shop.
Yeah, yeah.
But
product recall.
Yeah, but that's where the cinematic collides with the joy of the game. I mean, we could easily make it so that we're all just hiding in corners and eking out a win playing the percentages game, but that wouldn't make it fun. And, you know, for people that play a game like that, yeah, no, they're not going to enjoy this. But for people that just want the equivalent, I don't know, Super Smash Brothers or something, where we're just going for it and having a laugh, a party game, then great. Again, there's always going to be the balance to be had somewhere in the middle that suits everybody, which is almost impossible usually.
Mm-hmm. Again, you know what? My intentions for this rule set are to do absolutely nothing with them other than have a rule set that we know really well and can play scenarios with, where we don't have to, you know, after a couple of plays, we don't have to even look at the rules.
Yeah.
But this is showing up. Again, you know, if you're playing scenarios, you're pretty much, you're not running about trying to shoot each other all the time, but this is showing up areas that do need addressed.
You did achieve the not having to think about it. Like, oh, I rolled a one. I know right away I need to roll to see what happens. Four, I know that's safe. And that happened really quickly because we got so much practice with it.
Yeah.
So you're definitely on the right track there to have it flowing, but maybe it would be that each character can only return fire once per phase or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think out loud, you know, I've been toying with this for weeks, but replace the D6 with, say, a D10.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, maybe they could return fire if you roll on the bottom 50% of that. So a 1 to a 5 or whatever. So there's all sorts of ways around this. It was close in the end. Lots dead. So, I mean, it obviously evened itself up a bit since we last spoke. Things started to happen. Wee bit of a scrum in the middle, as you always tend to get in skirmish games. But what were your kind of initial thoughts there?
Yeah, the odds evened themselves out a little bit in terms of the rolls. I still didn't really roll that many sixes, I don't think, but I'm not going to be petty about it. And yeah, the scrum made the difference because I had a few more guys than you. So those extra, you know, plus ones per chap, that helped me to whittle a couple of your guys down. So again, as I said before, I think it's not a million miles away from being balanced enough and at the same time random enough to introduce that kind of chaotic element that you need for it not to be kind of bland. Mm-hmm. So that was enjoyable.
Yeah, a couple of things that jumped out to me. So the short stick is currently 2 inches long, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And melee combat happens automatically, or you're automatically engaged in melee if you're within that stick distance, rather than having to be base to base. I think I'm going to shorten that stick to 1 inch, because that stick also applies to the potential or partial cover. You know, if I'm within the short stick of a barrel or something that I could potentially get behind. But it's just a wee bit long, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, there's boxing matches happening where you would need, a boxing glove on a stick. And then it's confused us a couple of times with people who have been in melee combat. Technically, they've got a shot away maybe because we've not quite realised. So I think that stick needs to be shorter.
Yeah,
for sure.
So it's obviously, obviously he can't fire back because he's in melee.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other things I want to ask you about is, so two actions at the moment, you could attack twice. Do you think that is a good thing or a bad thing?
Being able to shoot twice per turn?
Yeah, like I've got two actions, I have a shot at you.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, I could do it again. I know some games just say you can attack once even if you've two actions. So I don't know.
See, that's a can of worms, because then if you can't shoot twice, but then I shoot at you, can you shoot back at me?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like D&D covers this with being able to fire a bow or a crossbow more than once per turn, and only if you've got specialization and so on. So yeah, it's a can of worms is the on the fence reply there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what I need to do with these rules is I need to take a lot out rather than add more in, for sure. I need to streamline them. It's easy to add all these wee caveats in when you're looking at a Word document.
Yeah.
Because you're always thinking, again, me not actually even being a games designer, but I'm always just thinking, oh, and that'd be cool. And if that happened, that'd be cool. And you end up with all these cool things, and it's Homer Simpson's car. You've got the, you've got all the stuff in it.
And it's a monster.
Yeah, aye, so.
I before E, except after C, except for the following exceptions.
Yeah, yeah. The 1 in 6 thing didn't, like it was entertaining. I don't think it got ridiculous.
It was a disaster at the beginning, which made it feel like it would be a disaster every turn, and it wasn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one gun exploding, which was me at the beginning, which made it seem like, this is just going to happen every time, and that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not as bad as I kind of feared. And yeah, what you touched upon earlier with the make it a D10 instead, which means there's still the risk, but nowhere near as high. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, again, with D&D, I used to worry that even with a D20, like, my guys are real expert in this thing, lockpicking, let's say, but there's still that 5% chance that I could roll a 1 and fuck it up and break my lockpick. Like, how much of an expert can I be? And it's like, you know what, calm down, it's a
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to be perfect, and we just want it to be fun.
The one, the malfunction table, you know, your weapon breaking on a one, is it a step too far? Like, again, it is funny, but like a couple of guns broke. There's, bearing in mind, 16 trained warriors on the table, a disproportionate amount of breakage for the guns. So I don't know if that's maybe a step too far.
Well, it's still only a 1 in 36 chance or something, you know, roll a 1, then roll a 1 again. So
yeah,
it's going to be rare enough that...
But maybe the 2 needs to not be... Maybe the 2 needs to not be that the weapon's broken.
Yeah, aye, it's only a 1 rather than a 1 or a 2, because then suddenly the chances are a lot slimmer, like, you know, 1 in 18 or something.
Yeah, so 2's maybe, you know, you'll fix your weapon.
I'm sorry if my probability is wrong, but, you know, roughly, whatever.
Another couple of mechanics that I've got in here. So we talked about Overwatch. I know this is a common mechanic in other games. So you could spend your 2 actions to go into Overwatch. And it means that anyone, you know, in their own turn that comes into long sticks distance, you could fire at them with a +1 modifier. One of the notes I took there was, can you go into Overwatch if you've already got somebody within a long sticks distance of you? And I would say no, probably. I think that would devalue that. So
there are games that deal with that, like there's a video game series called XCOM or UFO that you might be familiar with, whereas if somebody's like gone into Overwatch, if anybody moves within their line of sight, then they can fire off a shot, or if anybody attacks them directly, they can fire back. So maybe something like that, but again, it depends how complicated you want it to be. And yeah, I mean, even in XCOM though, the probability of that person firing back with a snapshot is reduced because they're doing it, you know, it's not like they're taking their time and aiming, so they suffer a penalty to do it as well. But then there's another thing to take into account, like, you know, oh, I'm +2 for this, I'm +1 for that, but I'm also -1 because it's a snapshot, and so on. So yeah,
one of the I'm just looking at my rules here, and we've managed to, like, this is all my fault obviously because I wrote the thing, but we managed to not play not involve one of the rules at all, and that is that when you successfully shoot a character, you get to move them. The attacking player gets to move that defending player by a short sticks distance. And this is to simulate recoiling or staggering or whatever.
Yeah.
And that also means that a successful shot against a character who's on a ledge or building could be shot off. You know, he could be shot and stagger forward and topple off and take damage that way. So I wish I'd remembered
Me
that.
Me too now.
Because I like that. That's definitely something that I want to keep in.
Yeah.
The rerolls mechanics. So you receive 1 reroll per phase. So again, for the listener's benefit, the game is broken into turns, a turn being the activation of an individual miniature, but the activation of all these miniatures on both sides, once we get to the end of that, that's a phase. So per phase, we're bringing in 1 reroll per phase for every 2 miniatures you lose, and the idea behind that is just to try and give somebody a chance. Like, I don't want somebody getting hammered. So you ended up with a few rerolls there at the end, didn't you? And they all failed.
Yeah.
But still,
yeah,
you had them.
I had to roll 4 or higher out of 6, so that was a 50% chance. I had 3 rerolls, and they all failed. So sometimes that's just the way it goes. But it was nice having those 3 rerolls because I'd lost 6 characters. It kind of gave you that feeling of, you know how like the main hero in a film digs down deep because they're the last one left, you know, like Arnie against the Predator. He only really got serious when everybody else was dead, and that's when he started using all his rerolls. Mm-hmm. So that kind of mechanic's nice. You know, you're a man down, but your team pulls together and tries extra hard.
Yeah, it's either desperation or motivation or anger or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's nothing worse than getting absolutely tabled and you're seeing your power just dropping and your options are dropping. So at least this is giving you like a potential way out to keep it competitive to the end.
Yeah, because otherwise if you're like 2-3 players down, it's over.
Yeah, there's nothing less fun than when you're just chasing the remaining survivor around the table. So
yeah.
One of the other, I can't remember where I stole this one from, but supporting fire. So if you have a core trooper within short distance of a
specialist,
the specialist will be able to roll two dice rather than one and pick the best result. I don't know that we managed to do that in the end. But
no, because every time I did that, I had a core trooper with my specialist. He either ended up getting into melee range with one of your chaps or killed or
yeah,
something along those lines. Or it wasn't his turn to roll or, yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm just, I've got a lot of notes here. I'm just seeing if there's anything else of any interest. I'm still not settled on the return fire thing. I think it could be fun, but it just felt a bit too much like tennis at times.
Yeah, it almost makes every exchange of fire, like, there's no advantage to you being the one to attack, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, well, it doesn't matter if I attack or you attack, you know.
I mean, maybe a less severe punishment for that is that a miniature that's just fired waives its right to any potential cover benefit on the premise that, you know, you've stepped out and exposed your position to shoot.
Yeah.
So they can't return fire immediately, but anyone else who clocks you at that point, you're not going to be able to get that partial cover bonus because you've popped your head out your foxhole.
Yeah. So. And, well, that's what they do in XCOM, is if, like, you've got one guy, he's on Overwatch, I run forward and shoot him and he fires back because he's on Overwatch, then my second guy runs forward and your chap cannot then also shoot my second guy because he's already shot his shot, so to speak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's then exposed, because that's a tactic to rush the guy to make him fire his one shot he's got, and then the other, you know, maybe the first guy takes it in the chest or whatever, but the other two are like, right, thank you for your sacrifice.
Yeah.
We're going to go and stomp this guy now.
Yeah, lots to think about. I'm going to get back to the drawing board. I don't think it's a rip it up and start again. It's at the tweaking stage.
Yeah. I would definitely say the returning fire thing was too infinite, if you like.
Yeah.
You could have, like...
And for clarity for the listener, this didn't mean that if you fired at me and failed and I fired back at you and failed, then you would then get to fire back at me. It didn't extend that far, but still... It did get a bit silly, and there were times where you think, well, I don't really want to shoot because he might shoot me back, and that's not what I want to see happening. So
yeah, like, maybe it is that if you're on Overwatch you can fire back but not otherwise.
No, that would make sense as well, but lots of ideas, and I think at this stage now it's about cutting rather than adding. Like, I've added quite a lot over time, and
yeah,
some of it needs taken out or certainly dialed down a bit.
My only, the afterthought I just had there was, do we really want everybody going into Overwatch? Because then the game might take 8 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas initially you've got a game where everybody runs around like laser tag, which is a lot more fun than everybody just hiding and camping.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'm not married to Overwatch, so I'm... happy to leave it in as an option for the next couple of games, and if we see it becoming a bit of an issue, then it could come out and it's not going to impact anything.
Although I'll say as well, if you've got objectives and scenarios, then going into Overwatch isn't the answer, because it's like, well, it's all fine and well waiting, but we've only got 6 turns to get this done. We need to get into the middle and get that chest and run away with it or whatever.
Mm-hmm,
so that solves that, maybe. Again, makes it more complicated, and I don't envy your task of polishing it further, but you've come a long way with it so far.
Yeah, I mean, the listener might disagree. They'll just probably recognise most of this and see this a bit of a magpie game. But then, what game isn't these days?
Yeah.
There's very little new under the sun. The Bedroom Battlefields Patreon now comes with bonus content, the first of which is a full battle report from White Dwarf issue 166. I read through this iconic showdown from 1993 between Blood Angels General Andy Chambers and Orc Warboss Jervis Johnson as they showcased the new Warhammer 40,000 second edition. Find out more at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. But on a final note, something that's not entirely relevant to this rule set, but something I wanted to kind of run by you is, like, you'll notice I've got lots of scattered terrain, like, that was just on the table, but it wasn't involved in the game, if you like.
Yeah.
And I had some ideas. I'm going to coin a term here, serene. Would it be serene rather than terrain? So, like, terrain that's not just like a wall that you could either be behind or not. So there's lots
scenery.
Of quite, yeah, like thematic, like there's a wee whirlpool portal here.
Yeah,
in
that
the
looks cool.
Of the table. And what I was thinking there is because we've got a lot of ledges that, I mean, some of them we had ladders up to, but some of them you couldn't get up to. So maybe we put a little icon or piece of terrain up on each of the four ledges. And then if you go through that whirlpool, you could roll a dice to see, you know, maybe I'm going to end up there or up there or up there or up there, or maybe, you know, another roll, maybe a one takes me out the game completely, or a two, I just walk through it. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud, but there's potential for, you know, suddenly I could get a guy up here and he's, you know, in a really good shooting position.
I like the idea of the terrain being a lot more scalable in terms of like climbing on it and stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
because a lot of it's just decor. It's an accessible decor just now.
Yeah, because I had my one guy there. If he was on his own, he would have to run quite far all the way back and then round. Whereas if he could suddenly climb it, you know, in a turn, then that could change the balance of the game altogether. If I had three guys on one side of a wall who all climbed at the same time,
mm-hmm.
then maybe your chap would be like, uh-oh, I could take out one of them maybe, but then two of them have got a shot on and then he's got to hide behind the wall, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So making it more accessible, although time-consuming to get over walls and things, that would open the game up quite a lot. That'd be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, again, going at that sort of swingy, high-risk, high-probability thing, but maybe going through the portal, you know, maybe on a one, you're completely out of the game, but maybe on a six, you could just take your pick of anywhere. On the, you know, you could pick wherever you want to go. There's options for some like that. Another couple of things I was thinking. So we've got little canisters here.
Maybe exploding canisters.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could shoot at that, and it's going to do damage. You know, quite significant damage to everything within the long stick radius.
That would be cool. Video game tastic.
We've got like a couple of, well, like a little robot with, I think that's guns. It's either that or he's a Hoover. But, you know, if, and then there's a turret up there, machine gun turret.
Yeah.
So, you know, say it's about picking some equipment up and taking it over to this guy. Maybe you could then control that temporarily. It could be taken off you. Maybe you collect this wee suitcase and that's the controls to that turret. And you could, you know,
right.
do quite a bit of damage with the turret. Again, it would then be up to me to try and find the guy that has the suitcase and take it off him again. So there's lots of wee things that you could put on there. I think, again, it would be about just having one of them rather than a table full of different novelties and you just end up forgetting about them.
That's so, right enough.
I mean, I didn't even have enough brain capacity to remember the mechanic
row.
where you move the model you've just successfully shot at. So
staggering and so on.
Aye, that's really it for now. Like I say, back to the drawing board. And of course, be delighted to hear from anyone out there who has any input as well. There's far better minds than me out there. So we'll try and get a game again in the near future and
that'd be good.
See what tweaks I've made.
Yeah.
But I mean, you would have presumably found that you weren't having to reference the rules or that very much as we played. Like
I barely looked at them.
We knew what we were doing.
Yeah, and partly that was, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, of course. The different games we've played before had a rough idea. So that helps as well. No need to reinvent the wheel at every turn.
Okay, so after yesterday's game, after reviewing the feedback and getting a wee look at the rules again, I did make some changes and I thought it would make sense to just make a wee clip and put it in this episode before I published it as well. So the big takeaways there, I binned the Overwatch mechanic. I just felt it was, as much as it's a cool idea, it was just quite unnecessary. The return fire, you know, the ability to just return fire if a shot fails. I've taken that out, and I've taken out the broken weapon, the weapon malfunction mechanic as well. So now it's if someone rolls a 1 when they're trying to shoot, then the target can return fire. So instead of your weapon breaking, you try and fire at somebody, you roll a 1, your shot obviously fails, and then they're going to get to shoot back at you straight away. So I figured that was a bit of a better punishment on that front. A punishment, like there's anything you could do about rolling a 1. If you fail your shooting attack, not necessarily on a 1, you're not protected by cover should your intended target activate later in that phase and decide to shoot back at you. So that's another wee dynamic going on there with attack and counter-attack. I got rid of the ability to use 2 activations to shoot twice or to fight in melee twice. I've brought in, I'm very wary of extra modifiers, but I did end up bringing in an aim mechanic for specialist troopers so they could spend their first activation to get a +1 to shoot in their second activation. I know that's pretty common in skirmish games, so I did bring in that. And then with melee as well, melee must now always end. So when your character wins in melee combat, they will essentially push or throw the opposition player away. And, whatever player activates next, they could go back in and re-engage in melee. But I just wanted to avoid that situation where you get loads of players essentially stuck together, loads of miniatures stuck together, and it's never worth the disengage, and you suffer the free hit and the penalty and all that. So I've tweaked that as well. So in the next playtest, we'll see how that works out. And just one more wee thing that I'd worked on as well. I was joking about the Serene, scenario-based terrain, so calling that Serene. And I've got that wee portal, like a wee whirlpool-y portal thing. So I put a table there. So basically, I like the thought that you could have a few games where this thing is in the middle of the table. And if you get a miniature up to it, you could just walk into it. And what's going to happen then, you're going to roll a d6. So on a result of a 2, you respawn in the northwest corner. On a 3, you respawn in the northeast corner. A 4 is the southwest corner, and a 5 is the southeast corner. But if you roll a 6, you could reposition your miniature anywhere on the table. So that's a really good strategic advantage. But if you roll a 1, it's your opponent that gets to reposition your model anywhere on the table instead. So I thought that could throw up some funny and quite cool situations in a scenario-based narrative game as well. So that's the update so far. It's a very much a living document, a work in progress. I dare say there'll be more changes tomorrow. Probably by the time this episode goes out, there'll be more things that I've tweaked. But all part of the fun. And I'm looking forward to the next opportunity to playtest it and just keep moving forward with it. And there's certainly a lot in there that I'm happy with, but still room for improvement as well. So, all right then, just one last thing to mention on this episode. It's our question of the month for August 2024. We are cracking on towards the end of the month, and I need the answers in by Thursday the 29th of August. So you've not got very long at all to head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail and to answer the question, what miniature would you love to own above all others? What's that one miniature you've always wanted but never quite managed to find or buy at reasonable price? So get them in. Like I say, go over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail and send your clip in before Thursday the 29th of August so we could include it on our question of the month episode going into September. And I'll have a nice wee update on my own situation with the Great Unclean One in that episode as well. I'll save that till then. All right then, thanks as ever for listening to this humble podcast. I really do appreciate you spending some time with me, and we'll speak again on the next one.